Okay, tonight is Monday, March the 21st, or 16th day of the month of Adar Bet. This is the Gemara Shir. We're up to Sukkah Daf Mem Aleph Amud Bet. Okay, Rabotai. We're on Mem Aleph Amud Beis. Just initially, two he'arot from the Gemara which we did last week, which was Matana Amanas Lahachzir, Matana Amanas Lahachzir, that we are allowed to be Yotzei the mitzvah of Lulav with a Lulav that I give to somebody as a gift on condition that they return it to me at a later date. Please open up your Gemara for a second to Daf Lamed Hey Amud Aleph in the middle of the page. And I want you to ask the Oruch Laner's question on this Gemara of Matana Menas Lahachzir. The middle of the page, the Gemara, is the two dots smack in the middle of the page. Orla Pasul. An Esrog of Orla is Pasul. The Gemara quoted a Machloikis between Rab Chia Baravin and Ravasi. Why an Esrog Shel Orla is Pasul? And one of them says, Lefi She'ein Bo Heter Achila. I want you to ask the Oruch Laner's question.
You have to give it back?
Ah! The Gemara says that an Esrog of Orla cannot be used because you're not allowed to eat it. That in order to demonstrate Ba'alut, one of the things, that the criteria that is used is that I have to have the ability to eat it. You are not permitted to eat an Esrog Shel Orla. Therefore, it's lacking in bailus. Asks the Oruch Laner, if I give you my esrog on condition that what? That you give it back to me, well, you can't eat it either. So how can that now be called bailus if you don't enjoy the legal right to eat it? That's his question. And he leaves it at Tzorchin Gadol. So what will you now want to say is the critical difference between an Esrog Shel Orla and in this particular case?
Whether everyone can eat it or one person can eat it.
So say it a little shrill up.
Okay, whether there's a person who can eat
it. That's it. Exactly. The question is, there the Mishnah always focuses on the Esrog. The Esrog, the Chetza, can't be eaten. Halachically, because it's made out of orla, according to one opinion, Masasheni, out of Yerushalayim, you're not allowed to eat it. Why? Because the chefza, the esrog, is not permitted to be eaten. Here we're dealing with a regular, old-fashioned esrog. From the esrog's vantage point, you're allowed to eat this esrog. There are no restrictions. I can't eat it personally because I have an obligation. I got to give it back to you. But that's external to the esrog itself. When the Gemara says that an esrog which requires a heter achila, it's referring to a heter achila based on the status of the chefza. That the item, the esrog itself, should not have any restrictions upon it, which now preclude you from eating it. So when you have an esrog of orla, which grew from a tree that within the first 3 years of its growth, you're not allowed to eat it. That type of an esrog is denied the possibility of bailus. But here, where it's just a regular esrog, that's a point number one. That the din of bailus is not a function of a gavra restriction, it's a function of the chefza. Yeah.
When it comes to Amanas Lahachzir,
yes.
So if the person doesn't give it back, is he over on Gezeler
Geneva? 100%. No doubt about it. And that's why he's not Yotzei the Mitzvah. That's why he's not Yotzei the Mitzvah, because it wasn't his. Retroactively, it wasn't his. That wasn't his. That's point number one. Point number two. There is a statement made in the Sefer HaPardes. I mentioned Sefer HaPardes last week, but there is another statement, which says, and I'm going to give you the analogy, and you tell me what do you think he's going to say. I come to shul in the morning, and I was an airhead. I forgot to bring my talis and tefillin. Okay? And I want to daven with a minyan. So I have two options. I can run home, get him, and I'm not going to daven with the minyan. Or I see somebody else's talis and tefillin lying around. I want to borrow them, but the guy's not there. So what's the din, Rabotai? Are you allowed to take somebody else's tefillin and use them without asking their permission? The answer is, yes, you are allowed. Why? There is a rule. Nichale la'adam le'me'evad mitzvah b'mamoneh. There is an implied understanding of Chazal that we, Am Yisrael, are delighted when somebody does something with our money. With our money. We are delighted. A mitzvah. Right, when you do a mitzvah. So therefore, he need not ask permission. You can go ahead and borrow his talis, borrow his love. Under ordinary circumstances, borrowing something without permission is the equivalent of gzela. So if my pen is lying around here and you want to write notes, you don't ask me my permission. You're not writing notes for a share, you're doing your taxes. Under those circumstances, you'll be violating the laws of gezel. Because we paskin, shoel shelo midas, gazlan heve. That's the din, acknowledged by one and all. Take this information and now ask a question. Tell me a chidush otzum that Sefer HaPardes, which is written by somebody, I forgot, is a Rabbi Avram ben Shalom or something, who is recording the practices of Rashi. That's what the Sefer HaPardes supposedly has done, to record for us Rashi's practices. Think of the din of Matana al Menas Lahatzir and use this particular halacha and tell me this incredible chiddush, which everyone disagrees with. But tell me what he says. But it's an interesting position. It's an interesting position. He quotes the Baal HaMor, Rabbeinu Zrachi HaLevi. That's what he quotes. So the Baal HaMor says,
He presumes that he would let you do it on Menas Lahatzir without telling him.
Correct. Without asking, without telling. That just as what? I am permitted to go ahead and take your tefillin because you are delighted that what? That I am fulfilling a mitzvah with your money. I am take pleasure, I derive pleasure when you fulfill a mitzvah with my resources, with my mitzvah, says the Sefer Pardes, that he raised this question. Veheishiv Rabbeinu Zrachya HaLevi, the Baal HaMor, Rabbeinu Zrachya HaLevi, writes that it's perfectly okay. You walk over to the thing, you pick it up, you make the bracha and put it back down. You never ask him, you never tell him, because the Nichalei La'adam L'mebe Mitzvah B'mamon. And he writes, V'ani Misupak B'davar. I don't think it's something. Tell me why, Rabotai, you think there's a very big difference between a talis and a tefillin versus
the talis not being or the tefillin not being.
Exactly.
What,
what this does is nichalei la'adam l'mevad mitzvah b'mamone simply removes the iser of gezel and puts it into what category? Shoel b'rishus. I borrowed it with permission. That's what it does. Instead of looking at it as borrowing without permission, since it's a mitzvah, the halacha says, it's as if I granted you permission. But by lulav, being granted permission is not sufficient. Because a lulav hasha'ul ain't adam yotzei yidei chavasa. You cannot be yotzei the mitzvah with a borrowed lulav. So I will grant you, says the Sefer Pardes, that if I take a lulav of yours without permission, I will not be a gazlan, I will not be a thief. But I'm not going to be able to yotze the mitzvah because it's only Shaul. I'm talking about the first day. Because it's only Shaul. And in order to create a transfer of Rishus, that can't work with the presumed chazaka of Michalei La'adam Me'evet Mitzvah B'Mamayne. You have to make a kinyan. And the only way you can make a kinyan is you give it to somebody where there is Das Makne. Therefore, hold on a second, he says, and he's correct, that when you take somebody else's talus and somebody else's tefillin, you can borrow them. But you can't make a bracha on the talus. Why not? Because the din is talus she'ula eino chayeves betzitzis. If I borrow a garment, a four-cornered garment. I borrow it from you. I do not have to put four tzitzis on it. Because the Torah writes in Parashat Kisetze, Gidilim ta'aseh lecha. Tzitzis requires ownership. If you borrow something for more than 30 days, then the Rabbanan say, if you've had it already for 30 days, it generates the impression that you own it, so we'll tell you to put tzitzis on it. So when you borrow somebody else's talus without asking his permission, it's perfectly okay to do so. The person wants you to be mekayim the mitzvah of putting on a talus for davening, but it doesn't make it yours. Therefore, it's sha'ul. You can wear a talus sha'ula, you can, but it's not chayiv in tzitzis, so you don't have to make a bracha. Tefillin, which doesn't require bayus at all, so when you borrow somebody's tefillin, not only are you yotze the mitzvah, but what can you do? Make a bracha, shake a shatz for the tefillin, because I don't, where does it say? It's one has to be the one.
So you do the same thing you do with lulav, don't ask the hafsir, so you say the bracha?
Yeah. Where, by a talus? If he gives it to you,
right.
But that's not if he's not around. If he gives you a gift, and he says, I am makna this to you, correct. But there is no need to do so. Why? Because there's no chiyuv per se to wear a talus. There's never a chiyuv to wear a talus. Tzitzis is a situational mitzvah. If you are wearing a four-cornered garment, you should have tzitzis on. I don't announce this too loudly. But if you never put on a four-cornered garment your whole life, will you have ever violated the mitzvah of tzitzis? No. But you will not have been the kind of the mitzvah of tzitzis either. Right? There are two aspects. There's no chiyuv to wear tzitzis unless you're wearing a four-cornered garment. That's why why do we put on a talus cut on an hour? Why do we wear tzitzis? Not because there was an issur to walk around without it, because we want to be mekayim in the midst of tzitzis. If you would not take off the talus cut, you wouldn't be. Does anybody have a four-cornered garment? Nobody's wearing a four-cornered garment. Way back then, when people walked around and they went to work and they wore their talus and tefillin all day. So they had a talus, they were wearing the talus all day. So you were mekayim in the midst of talus all day. The Gemara never heard of a talus cutter. First person who ever mentioned it is in the 12th century to Mordechai. First person to say the words talus cutter. Never heard of it. Because things changed, particularly in European communities where Jews became very integrated in general businesses. They were very good businessmen. And therefore they felt a little ashamed or embarrassed walking around with talus and tefillin all day. So they didn't wear a talus. And they felt guilty that they were not fulfilling the mitzvah of tzitzis all day. So they invented this little talus katan, which is a four-cornered garment, which you wear only to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis. So by a talus, there is no mitzvah to wear a talus by davening. None whatsoever. It's a nice thing. So you don't have to bother and going to ask the guy to make a kinyan for you. By lulav, the only way to be mekayim the mitzvah is if you own it. And there is a chiyuv. You must take a lulav. There's no chiyuv to wear talus. You can be mekayim the mitzvah davening very well without a talus. Yes.
First and the last point.
Yes.
When you, according to the Pardes, when you wear the borrowed talus with tzitzis, are you mekayim the mitzvah? Are you mekayim the mitzvah if it's a sha'ula with tzitzis on it? Is there a kiyum?
Yeah, no chiyuv.
Okay, then where did we learn that you can't make a bracha if you're not mekayim the mitzvah?
Okay.
Okay.
I mean,
it's a good question, because one of the that's not a question on the Pardes. That's a question on the Gemara. The Gemara says Tala Sheula is not chayevis in tzitzis, and therefore you don't make a bracha.
It concludes you don't make a bracha.
That's time. Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a whole debate about a shul's talis. If you take a shul's talis, should you make a bracha on it or not? So some paiskim say no, you don't, because you're just borrowing the talis from the shul. And others say, no, if you're a member in the shul, you own that talis. It's joint, it's shutfus. It's joint ownership of the talis. And when you take it, you're putting on your talis, and you're entitled to make a bracha. But it's a good question. I have to study it further. Why is it that if it's only, you're not chayiv, why don't you make a bracha on it? It's a good question. Yes.
As far as the other point about the distinguishing factor between you know, a person wants to have a mitzvah done with his belongings versus a das matna. That's only one way to look at it. The other way to look at it would be that when you is that you're create the principle of Adam rotzav, you know, mevel Adam b'tashmishay is creating a kinyan. It's not determining whether it's sheula and not gezula. It's creating a form of a kinyan. After all, what's the difference between gezula and sheula? There's got to be an element.
There is a very big difference.
Of course, but it's got to be das. It's got to be the das of the owner who's making the But it has kinyan effect. It has.
But it's kinyan she'ela.
But it's still
not
kinyan. But it's still a kinyan.
But not enough to be litmus test the Bailus. So you're saying that here it's as if the that's exactly what's running through the Baal HaMor's mind. The Baal HaMor agrees with you.
You need a masa kinyan? I'm not part of the masa.
He says you don't even need a masa kinyan.
He picks it up.
But on part of the masa, you don't need it.
Well, then you have the same question about the she'ela case. Where's the das? Where's the kinyan for the? It's a kinyan. It's being caused between gazela and she'ela.
Right. I that's a good point, because sho'ul is not just an absence of hefker. It's not an. There is a kinyan. A sho'el has kinyanim, and he has responsibilities. Let's assume I borrowed your talis, and I got it all dirty. I have to pay for it. What happens if an accident happened, right? The wind came and blew it away, and that's it. I have to pay for it. A sho'el is chayav an oinsin, because there are kinyanim. That's a good point. Yeah. Okay. Now, let's continue to Gemara. Now, we read in the Gemara last week. We are now, I'll tell you exactly where we're up to. It's about 7-8 lines before the line gets wide, towards the bottom of the page. We just read the Gemara, zipped through it last week. Now I'm going to see something very interesting. Ask the Gemara, Lama li lemeimar shelokho be'elev zuz. Why is it necessary for the Brisa to tell us that Rav Gamliel purchased his lula for 1,000 gold pieces? Everybody have that? The place? Answers the Gemara, Lehodiacha kama mitzvos chavivos alehen. To let you know how precious a mitzvah was, that Rav Gamliel was even willing to borrow, to pay $1,000 for a lulav and esrog. Very nice. So, next to the word kama mitzvos, there's a little cycle. Rav Kivega says, look at Tosfos in Bava Kama. On Daf Tesamid Beis, and we're going to see it. Machlokes Tosfos and the Ramah on this particular issue, which Rabbi Kivega told us to look at. So take the sheet, and I have the Tosfos on the top of the page. Says the Gemara. We'll start with the Gemara. It's the third line of the Gemara. Amar Rav Zera, Amar Rav Zera. Behidur mitzvah ad shlish, as opposed to an ordinary obligation for a mitzvah, that hamivazbeiz al yivazbeiz yosei mechomesh, that for any single mitzvah you are not supposed to spend more than 20% of your assets for any particular mitzvah. You are not supposed to spend more than 20% of your assets for more than one particular mitzvah. And if you have to, you are exempt from that particular mitzvah. For Hidur mitzvah, you can spend up to a third. Amar Rabbi Zeira, behidur mitzvah ad shlish. That you can spend up to a third of your income for hidur mitzvah. So, for example, if I have only $100, okay? And now comes time to buy a lulav and esrog. If the esrog costs $21, I'm exempt from buying a lulav and esrog. Because 20% is only $20. But if I decided, you know what, I can afford it, but I want to have it. Not only do I want to buy an esrog, I want to buy a Hashanah esrog up to a shlish, up to $33. You can do if that's your thing. Beyond that, you're not allowed to spend. Fine. Take a look at Tosis on the top of the page. I bracketed for you. Shlish beso. Mashma de'ein tsarich lebazbeis kol mamono liknos esrog. It would appear from this Gemara that you don't have to go all out in order to what? To buy an esrog. Afilu lo yimsa bepachos, the heavier mitzvah overes. Even if you cannot find one, and even though it's what? A mitzvah overes. What does overes mean? A fleeting mitzvah. Tomorrow the mitzvah ain't here anymore. I don't have to spend it. Vafilu shlish peso, mashma delo mechayiv. Even what? Even a third. You don't have to spend. You don't have to spend a third. How much do you have to spend? Up to how much? 20%. Va'arina nami, ha'mivazbeis, al yivazbeis, yosef mechalmash. Only 20%. But if you're not more than 20%, you don't have to spend on any particular mitzvah, even an esrog.
Where does that come from?
Where does the Gemara? I don't know. I don't remember the source of that. I think the Gemara just makes a statement, recognizing that there's got to be some limitation. The Gemara does it by inference. I don't know how to get to the 20%. There are only three mitzvos where the halacha says you have to sell the shur off your back for. Only three. Ner Chanukah, one. Arba Kosos, two. That's it. No? And halacha is Ner Chanukah. Oh, that's what we said. Ner Chanukah, that's it. And the common denominator is Persuminisa. Because that's a mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, you have to sell everything. Two mitzvos. That's it. Halacha is Ner Chanukah and avocados. For everything else, there's a limit. I don't know how they arrive at only 20%. I'm not sure.
Isn't the
tzuba a tzuba,
right?
That's because it's a piron chayiv. That's something else.
It's not part of it. It's not the rice obligation?
No, that's something. The rice obligation is to create the obligation. Uh-huh. That's the obligation. Now, you're a debtor. A debtor pays anything. If you borrow money, if you create a debt obligation, you got to pay it. Even if it's I feel it in Glima, the Al Cafe. Said that in every ksuba. Correct. Because of the fact that you created a debt obligation. But the Torah doesn't impose that under those circumstances. And listen to. What?
Arbacosas?
Yes. Arbacosas for Suminisa.
It's a regular
business. The problem is, you didn't come to the Gemara Shia the last couple of months. That's all. We've been talking about abacosis for abacosis.
I was afraid to ask the question.
You should have been afraid.
I did. I'll be there next week.
That's all. How many weeks have we talked about?
He
writes it up after Shabbos. He's going to bury it after Shabbos. And he writes up tomorrow. He
clearly doesn't retain it.
He's another. Listen to the comment that Tosha speaks now. Ubisuka Choshev Le Revusa the Rab Gamliel Shekana Esrog Be'el Zuz. The Gemara found it kind of startling that Rav Gamliel would spend 1,000 gold pieces on what? On an esrog. What's running through Tosis's mind? I can't imagine that Rav Gamliel, such a wealthy guy, that 1,000 was what? Less than 20% of his assets. I don't believe that. Therefore, it's just a guzma. It's just unbelievable. They were shocked. Shocked. So much so, they were shocked that they had to make a point that Rav Gamliel did it. Shalachol be'elev zuz.
which is less than the chomesh.
Which is
would be less.
No, it would be more than this chomesh, and that's why they were shocked. If it was within the chomesh, every time Dick and Harry would have to spend it, right? Let's assume you make $5,000, and the extra cost $1,000. Would you have to buy it?
Yes.
Yeah. Good.
20%.
It's good. So what's the big deal about Rav Gamliel?
So he's showing that.
That Rav Gamliel, his income was not $5,000.
Yes.
Was much less than $5,000. And what did he do? And he paid $1,000. That's why they're saying, oh boy, look what he did. Woo, woo, woo. If it was a regular guy making $5,000 and he had that, he should, any Tom, Dick, and Harry would have to spend the same. What's the big deal about Rav Gamliel?
So we assume.
So Tosfos here is pointing out that our Gemara, by highlighting and emphasizing that Rav Gamliel spent 1,000 zuz, is not really within the parameters of halacha. It was not expected, nor is the right thing to do. That's what Rav Kivega tells us to know. The Tosfos is saying, don't look at this as the greatest virtue in the world, because you might think, you know, Rav Gamliel spent $1,000, I'm going to. It's not such a smart thing to do. That's what Rav Kivega wants us to know. However, not everybody agreed with Rav Kivega, with Tosfos, that was the scenario concerning Rav Gamliel. Please take to the flip side. Turn to the flip side, which is the Mabukah Yosef on that very sugya, on that sugya in Bava Kama Daf Tesamit Beis, and I bracketed the relevant lines. Actually, too much. You see where I bracketed? Go two lines below that, towards the end of the line, it says, because of Haramazal. Everybody have it? Right. Two lines after I bracketed, towards second to the next word on the line, because of Haramazal. And the Ramah wrote, Mistabra, logic would dictate, to who adin, im he'eshir, if somebody what became very wealthy as a result of his own initiative, exactly, he worked diligently and he became a very wealthy person, and he could spend more than a third for any particular mitzvah, they chayav nidchakin. And if he were to spend more than a third, his life would not be what? Pressed. He still would not be experiencing any difficulty. Kimi shizimen lo hakadosh baruch hu shilomi giyodami. Then he's considered like what? Like somebody who hakadosh baruch hu blessed. And you wondered, did anybody win the lottery last Friday night? 201 million? Mega million? No, how was it? What's it now? 244. Good. Excellent. So if somebody wins the lottery, 244 million, so now let's see. Let's assume. What?
How many is running when you buy them?
Right. But here's Rama's point.
He can spend money.
Let's assume an eslog would cost $80 million. A beautiful eslog, $80 million. No, that's more than a third. Of 85 million is escrow cost. So you mean to tell me he's not supposed to spend $85 million? He's got $160 million left. He's not going to be a poor person by spending more than a third of his income on this business.
Another four surfaces, he will be.
So under those circumstances, you are permitted to do so. So what's he telling me here? What is the Ramah telling me? That apparently, why are you criticizing Rav Gamliel? What must you say about Rav Gamliel? He was lonely. He was. That we know. Rav Gamliel was a very big usher, was a very wealthy person. And in fact, everybody in Beit Rav Gamliel, starting with Rebbe, and first Rav Gamliel, Rav Shim Gamliel, Rebbe, the Gemara says that Rebbe was so wealthy, lo pasak tznon mibeso. It was considered a big thing that radishes were on his table even during the middle of the winter. when nobody had radishes, okay? He was very, very wealthy. So when you're exceedingly wealthy, then under those circumstances, the limitations don't apply. Rabbi Shechter once said this, gave the shir, in relationship to when he spoke about stucco, right? So a guy, let's assume, Baruch Hashem, he's making $1 million a year. Okay, he's making $1 million. So you can say, for the mitzvah of tzedakah, I only have to give $200,000 tzedakah. I'll be din. That's true. But you mean to tell me such a guy shouldn't give a little more than $1 million? You know, excuse me, tzedakah is 10%. He only has to give $100,000 for tzedakah. So this guy, you mean to tell me if he'll give $400,000, he has nothing left to live? $600,000 a year for the live. Under those circumstances, the limitations don't apply. All of these limitations, that's what the Ramah is saying, only apply when you're making betzimtzum. When had you spent in excess of this percentage, you now would what? Be facing economic stress. And the halacha does not want you to come to a situation where you have to come and seek communal funds. That the halacha does not want. The Gemara in Beitza says, and I quote, "Asei shabatcha chol va'al yitzarech labrios." Rather, make your Shabbos a weekday meal, rice wheels and cottage cheese, rather than what? Spend money and then have to go collect tzedakah because I decided to get a fancy roast for Shabbos. Asei shabatcha chol. This came to haunt me yesterday. Somebody sent mishloach manot, rice wheels and cottage cheese. It was actually pretty cute. But they weren't yet to the midst of mishloach manot. Because you're supposed to have an edible. It's not edible. Cottage cheese. I got one guy sent the ring box of English. That's so.
Cottage cheese is edible, but not rice.
Right? So, therefore, here, the Ramah is disagreeing with Tosis. Tosis claims that Rav Gamliel was an average income person, and he did something for which we make a guzma. And the Gemara points it out. And Rabbi Kivega wants us to look at that Tyson and say, that's not the standard by which you should be living. It's an unusual. Says the Ramah, you don't have to come to that conclusion. The Ramah, Rav Gamliel, was a wealthy person, and for him, it didn't mean that Sadishka Shpilton Rolli spent $1,000. What's the big deal? He had plenty more to live. Plenty more to live.
Steinsaltz has a calculation here that Ella's is 8 months' salary in those days.
What? In those days, 8 months' salary?
Average work, 8 months' salary.
Wow, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. Eight. That's 2/3 of your income. Wow. Okay. Okay. Well, I'm again right there. I'm again right there. What's the source? I have another thing here. That's the withdrawal. 1 second. Okay. I'm again right there. Omale Mar bar Amema le Ravashi. Mar, the son of Amema, said to Ravashi, Abba, meaning Amemar, Tsluye Komatsli Bey. He used to daven when he was holding his lulav. He daven, said Kriyashma, Shmon Esrei, while he was holding his lulav. Asked the Gemara Meisve, how could he be doing that? The Brisa says, Lo ye aches adam tefillin biyado. A person should not hold a pair of tefillin in his hand. V'sefer Torah b'cheiko v'yispalel, and he should not daven. V'lo yashtin behen mayim, and he should not go to the bathroom holding tefillin or a sefer Torah. V'lo yishan behen, not permitted to sleep with wearing tefillin or holding a sefer Torah. Lo shinas keva v'lo shinas aroi. Not a full sleep at night, or even to taking a little drimmel, a little nap. No nap when you have tefillin. The Amar Shmuel, sakin ukeara ki karumos hareilu kayotze bohen. A knife or a bowl or a loaf of bread or money is exactly like a sefer Torah and a tefillin. So therefore, the question is, how could Amemar be reporting with Mar Barei Verma, the son of Amemar, be reporting that his father held his lulav while he was davening. The Braisa says that these articles you should not be holding in your hands while you're davening. You should not be holding them. So why did he do so? Answers the Gemara. Hasam lav mitzvah ninu. Vitarid behu. There is no mitzvah to hold a lulav or an esrog. Excuse me. No mitzvah to hold tefillin or a sefer Torah. Certainly no mitzvah to hold a knife or a bowl or a loaf of bread or money. Therefore, torid behu, your mind is what? Preoccupied, and you can't be mechavan to davening. Hacha, here, by lulav, mitzvah ninhu, it is a mitzvah, velo torid behu. Let's take a look at Rashi. Because the Ritva, which I'm going to read, we'll read together, says, I just don't understand what Rashi's talking about. Says Rashi. Take a look at Rashi. We'll start Rashi. Lo ye'echos adam v'yispalel. Does everybody see the Rashi caption? Lo ye'echos adam v'yispalel. Everybody have the caption of Rashi? Says Rashi. His mind is occupied about these items so that it shall not fall. And they will be shamed. And as a result, his mind is not focused properly on davening. Why lo yishan behem lo shenas keva v'lo shenas aroi? Shema yiplu miyado. Perhaps the Sefer Torah or the tefillin will fall out of his hands, and what? And they'll fall on the floor. That's not very nice. V'hachi ukimne lebahayoshen. This is how we came across the Gemara in the second parak. D'hadu ketani lo keva v'lo aroi. That which the Gemara says, that you're not supposed to even take a nap, is if you're holding a pair of tefillin or a Sefer Torah in your hands, you're not allowed to sleep at all. Now why can't you hold a knife? Sakin, misyare shema yipol, v'yitkalo baraglo. If you're holding a knife, you're afraid that if you don't hold it carefully, you'll drop it and you'll cut your toe off. Uke'ara, mile'a. If you have a bowl full of food or something, so you're afraid, you don't want to drop it. Apparently he's not worried about dropping the bowl and breaking the gap. I don't know why Rashi had to say that. Uma'ot shelo yitpazru. You don't want to lose money. If you have coins and you drop them, they're going to go rolling all over the place. Vikikar and a loaf of bread. Sh'im yipol yehei nimas. If the bread falls, it'll become revolting, disgusting, and you won't want to eat it. Therefore, your mind is preoccupied. Says the Gemara, there's a difference between those items and a lulav. Those items, lav mitzvah ninhu, says Rashi, le'ochzan, there is no mitzvah to hold them. Vehev yilon alav lemasa. Therefore, it becomes a burden to hold them. Lefikach torud b'masa'am, his mind is occupied about holding these items. V'kaved alav masa'am u'shmirasam, it becomes something. The what? That it becomes something heavy upon him. Not only heavy physically, but heavily a burden upon his mind to guard them and to make sure that he don't fall. Hacha, says Rashi, by lulav nitilasa. Ulekichasa mitzvahi. There is a mitzvah to take a lulav and esrog on Sukkos. Umitoch shechaviva mitzvah alav, ein masa'ah v'shimura kaved alav v'lo tarid. Since it's a mitzvah, it doesn't appear that heavy. It doesn't appear that burdensome, and therefore your mind is a little more relaxed, and you can focus on it. So says Rashi. So says Rashi. Now we'll take a look at the Ritva. Very strong language. He says, "Lo yiradnu l'sof." What's he talking about?
Are we thinking about this for while we're doing it?
Yeah, it's exactly it. Of course, if you think if the mitzvah, if you're aware of the mitzvah, and you have it in your,
you can't daven
at all. It's even more than it. You know, you're not just worried about dropping it. You're thinking about the mitzvah. That's what the Ritva is going to say. What's he talking about? I bracketed the Ritva for you. Uparkinan hasam. The Gemara answers. Lav mitzvahi v'tarid. Hacha by lulav mitzvahi v'lo tarid. Pirish Rashi. Ki mitoch chavivu shel mitzvah shenot lo lotzayispo. Because of his great love for taking this mitzvah and to be yotzei the mitzvah, lo tarid. His mind will not be preoccupied. And he'll be able to daven properly. Says the Ritva. I just quite can't understand what Rashi is saying. Divadai kol sheken shemitoch chavivus hamitzvah yitein libo belulav shelo yipol velo yiskan b'tfilasa. There's much greater attention that you will pay to a lulav than you will to a bowl of food. Because a bowl of food, why? It's no mitzvah to hold in your hand. So even if you drop it, what's the biggest consequence? What's the biggest consequence? It'll get a little dirty, and I won't want to eat the food. I'll lose a couple of pennies, or dimes, or nickels that roll away. But if it's sukkahs and there's a mitzvah, and it falls out of my hand, what's going to happen? Oy, I'm not going to be able to eat the kind of mitzvah. So I pay even more attention to a lulav than I would the other things. So why are you allowed to daven holding a lulav in Esro? The logic is just the opposite of the way Rashi presented it. Rashi presented it that since it is a mitzvah, it's no longer such a burden. I carry it much more freely, and therefore I will be able to daven. Because it doesn't feel that heavy to me. But the Ritva says it's just the opposite. If it's a mitzvah, you're going to pay more attention to that item, and will deny you the opportunity to engage in proper tefillah. So listen to how the Ritva explains it. V'yesh l'faresh, detir de delulav, kevan de mitzvah shatahi v'hi chaviva. Since this mitzvah applies now, and I cherish it, listen to this. Afa pi shemifane libo aleho ktsas. Even though I do pay attention a little to what? To the lulav in Esro. Eino mifane libo levatola. Your mind is not being distracted for what? For no reason at all. Why is it for no reason at all? Because it's at least it's a mitzvah. Ve'ein ze mis'akev b'tfilah kidei l'mnoa chibuf ha-mitzvah. And we are not going to what? Preclude this, because what will denying him this opportunity do? It will not allow him to express his what? His chavivus for the mitzvah. Claims the Ritva. In both cases, when you hold something, there's no doubt that it's going to detract your kavanah. There's no doubt about it. So when you're holding something that is optional, the halacha is going to object. Why are you holding this right now? I don't see the benefit. There are two, you wait, I have something in my hand versus good davening. So put the thing there and daven properly. There is no advantage tilting the scale to allow you to hold it. But when you're dealing with a mitzvah, there is a legitimate conflict. We know and acknowledge that when you hold the lulav, you are not going to focus as much on tefillah. But there is something that will compensate for that. What will compensate for that? The fact that you have a mitzvah, that you're fulfilling another mitzvah. So therefore, the fact that you won't be davening as well can be compensated by virtue of the fact that I'm engaged in another mitzvah. Therefore, we allow it. But in reality, claims the Ritva, both of them happen to be what? Happen to be mind distracting. Happen to be distracting. But the difference between the two is, under those circumstances, whether or not you're allowed to engage in this activity or not. engage in this activity or not. Yeah. The Bach writes in his commentary to the Tur, in Orach Chaim Siman Tzadik Vov, that if you daven and you have any of these objects in mind, not only have you not davened properly, you have not yotze the mitzvah of davening, and the Bach says you have to daven Shmoneh Esrei again. It's not just a recommendation, it's afilu bidi eved, lo yotza yidei chovaso, if you're holding any of these items which the Mishnah mentions, which the Braisa mentions. Then there is a secondary debate. Is it only these items or anything else? Logic would say that anything in the world that you're holding is no good. Anything that you're holding is no good. But some actually claim that it's only these items. Only these items. It's very strange. It's very strange. Very strange. It also happens to be very unusual where the Rambam places this halacha. You know how the Rambam has structured his davening, his halachas of davening. The Rambam has in Hilchos Tefillah a section of five things which are me'akvin es hatfilah. That if these five things don't exist, you are not yotzei to daven. You're not yotzei. For example, if you have to go to the bathroom and you daven, you're not yotzei to daven. Five things the Rambam gives. Then the Rambam lists another eight things which are highly recommended, but a b'di'evet, if they didn't exist, you are yotzei to daven. For example, I'm talking about Shimon Esra. For example, says the Rambam, Amida. We strongly recommend that you stand up for the Shimon Esra. But if you are lazy, good for nothing, and you sit down for Shmon Esrei, for the silent Shmon Esrei, b'di'evet yotzei to mitzvah of davening. So it's only a recommended procedure. So one of the things which the Rambam has in terms of recommended is tikkun hamalbushim, to be dressed appropriately for davening. Dressed appropriately. So he's got a bare standard that to daven when you're naked, libo roes or erva, that you're not allowed to daven. But if you have something covering you a little, you're allowed to daven, but that's not the way to approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's called tikkun hamalbushim. In the halacha in the Rambam of tikkun hamalbushim, that's where he writes, you're not supposed to be holding anything in your hand. In that same halacha. And many Mefarshei HaRambam are troubled. Why did the Rambam, of all places, put this business of holding a Sefer Torah, holding a pair of tefillin, in the halachas where he's discussing getting dressed properly? What connection did he see between this and appropriate dress? It's very strange, Rambam, and it isn't a very good answer for it. It's a very difficult statement. I don't quite understand why he writes it. But he writes... What? That's correct. But why does he even discuss it here? Why does he even discuss it here? So the Rambam is against the Bach. Number one, by the Rambam putting it in this thing, he's against the Bach. Because the Bach says if you have something in your hand, can't be yotzei to mitzvah, those halachos of the Rambam is only lichatchila and not b'di'evet. So the Rambam holds if you have something in your hand, b'di'evet you will be yotzei. And he mentions, if it's b'chag, mispalel odam b'chag v'lulavo b'yado. That's okay to have something, the lulav in your hand on Sukkot. Can't argue with the Gemara, that's what the Gemara says. Listen to this Trumas Hadeshen. Trumas Hadeshen. And I think the Trumas Hadeshen's question will shed light on another popular issue, which, if Im Aisher Chayli, I would say something about. What is it? Let me tell you what the Trumas Hadeshen says. I quote, Tshuva Yud Zayin, Simen Yud Zayin, Yesh Lehistapek, it's a very strange Trumas Hadeshen. Im Tzorech Lehizoher, Shelo ye'echoz machzer o sidur be'eis hatfila. I'm actually asking the question, asked the Trumas Hadeshen, whether you'd be allowed to hold a siddur or a machzor when you're davening.
If you know you're davening.
Why? Because who wants their machzor to fall on the floor? So if you're worried about something falling on the floor, so then don't hold it. So everybody should be like in a yeshiva and can be out. They have a shtender. So you put it on your shtender, and you, what?
Yeah,
exactly. That's why they built it with the thing over there. So you can put it on the thing, not to hold it. And he writes, venerally, it appears to me, shemutar, shemitzvasa bekach. Since this whole thing is done to facilitate davening, under those circumstances, it enhances your kavana for davening, and therefore you can't say that what? It's going to be a powerful deterrent. Saying like this, why is it that you can't hold a Sefer Torah? Because you're afraid it's going to drop. Because the Sefer Torah doesn't augment an idea of tefillah. But the machzor augments tefillah. So if it augments tefillah, your mind is not going to be what? On the fact that it's going to drop. You are concerned about davening. If you're concerned about davening, this is not going to be first and foremost on your mind. And he proves it from our Gemara. Since our Gemara says that on Sukkos, you're allowed to hold a lulav, so you see anything that is designed to what? To be related to a theme of the day, that's okay to have in your hand during davening. So if a lulav is permissible, the machzor should also be permissible. That's very nice. That's only if you're davening from a siddur or a machzor. But if you're davening from an iPad, I'm not 100% sure. I'm very serious. Whether this idea that, you know what? You don't want an iPad to drop. You know, it'll break. It'll fall on a hard floor. Who knows what's going to happen? Whether or not this particular concern might apply, even if it happens to be possibly used for that, once the Trumas Hadeshin is already asking this question, one might want to ask that question. Plus, for the other issue and concern, that it's so tempting after you finish Shmon Esrei to flick it to check your emails and the texting, which is undoubtedly a distraction, because if there was something as a ben soru mora today, it wouldn't be wine and meat, it would be texting. He's addicted to texting. And he stole money to buy that's what he stole money for, you know, from his father. You know, not from wine and meat. So that's a question. One day when I won't have enough, a lay low for 2 weeks or so. So I don't need any more controversies. What? That's all. What?
So we use the Yankee games.
Okay, but.
Doesn't reflect two different views of what the word tarid means. Is Rashi is referring to tarid about dropping.
Correct.
The Rambam and the Rifa are really talking about the effect on the tzviwa.
Correct. 1,000%.
So as long as something facilitates the tzviwa,
then it's not totally.
Then it's not entirely the tzviwa.
Correct. That's correct. That's a very good point. The Rifa is more concerned about what? The fact that your mind is going elsewhere. So if it's a dvar mitzvah, we assume your mind, it might be a little, but it's doing a mitzvah. Rashi is only concerned about one thing. Is the item going to fall on the floor? He's not worried about the impact that it has, that in itself is what is going to interfere with davening. It's more, you're concerned about the item. Yes.
So the Rashi is more logical, because it talks about going to the bathroom, which clearly is a concern of the Sefer Torah and the film. The concern is the object, it's not the kavanah.
That is correct. That is correct. 1,000%. That's correct. That's 100%. No doubt. I'm again right there. I'm again right there. Tanya. Rebbe Elazar b'Reb Tzadok Omer. Rebbe Elazar b'Reb Tzadok says, Kach hoya min hagan shel anshe Yerushalayim. Here is the practice of what?
We saw that? Check your email.
That's correct. Anshe Yerushalayim. Actually, check the second the time. Kachayon Anshe Yerushalayim. Adam yotze mi beiso. A person leaves his house. V'lulav obiyado. And the lulav is in his hand. Holech lebeis hakneses lulav abiyado. He's on his way to shul. He's carrying his lulav and esrog with him. And it doesn't mean in the bag and in the esrog box. Like, it means carrying it the way you normally carry it. Of course, like you're being mekayim the mitzvah. Hold on, I didn't say that. You did. That's going to be a debate between the Arizal and many others. We'll see in a second. Kairei kriyashma umispalel lulav abiyado. A guy says kriyashma and he's davening yantav shmon esrei. The lulav is in his hands. Korei batora, if he is reading the Torah, he's called up for an aliyah. Or nosei is kapov, he's a kayin. Be a little difficult to hold a lulav and esrog when you're going like this. A little difficult. Manicho agabe karka. You put it down on the floor and you pick it up after you finish reading the Torah.
Balkorei, everyone in the...
No. It means the guy, the Balkorei, or the Ola at least. Either, at that time there was no Ola. It means the guy who was one of the saints. The guy who's being called up to read. He's reading. The Balkorei. Holech levaker cholim. If you then go out after davening to visit somebody, or lenachem avelim, to be menachem avel, lulav abiyado. Nichnas lebeis hamedrash. After davening, when you go into the beis medrash, mishager lulav obiyad bino obiyad avdo obiyad shlucho. You send your lulav home with your servant, your son, or an agent, because this is what you're supposed to do on Yontif. After you finish your meal, after you finish davening shachris, then you go home and eat lunch. Then the rest of the afternoon, you're supposed to be in the beis medrash. So in the beis medrash, you don't have to hold your lulav and esrog, because you can't think of a choice while you're holding a lulav and esrog. Can't think about it. My kamashlon, what's this chiddush of the Anshei Yerushalayim? What are they doing? Lahodiyacha kama hayus reason b'mitzvos, to show you what, how zoriz they are b'mitzvos. Now there are many issues that emerge from this particular brisa. We'll take one that Moshe just mentioned. Everybody, I wouldn't say everybody. How many people here bench lulav and esrog when they in shul right before Hallel? How many people is that when they make the bracha on lulav and esrog right before Hallel? How many people do it before davening? How many people do it specifically in the sukkah? Okay, so here is the following debate. We know that whenever you have two mitzvos to do, and they both begin concurrently, and you can't discharge both of them at the same time, what rule do we apply? Tadeh v'sheino tadeh, tadeh kodeh. So based on that rule, what should you be doing first? Should you be taking the lulav and esrog, or should you daven first? You should daven first. That's one consideration. Consideration number two. We mentioned at the time that according to Shitas HaRambam, the mechayev of Na'anuim is the Hallel. Hallel is the mechayev of Na'anuim. That's the mechayev. That's why in every old-fashioned Tikkun Meir Siddur, and I think the Art Scroll also, where do they publish the bracha of Netilas Lulav? Right before Hallel. Right? Not before Adon Olam. On Sukkot, make sure you take Lulav and Esrei. No. And that was the Amud Debar. The Amud Debar, the general custom was to take lulav and esrog only after you davened already, because tadeh v'sheino tadeh tadeh kodem. And number two, to somehow demonstrate that there is a connection between Hallel and the Na'anuim, so you make the bracha right there, right before you're going to have the exalted kiyum of ulakachtem. Because midaraisa, as we'll see, just pick it up once and that's it. But to do the Na'anuim is an extended fashion. The Arizal is the one who introduced the fact that you should always make Birchas Halulav always in the Sukkah. No one before the Arizal said that. The Arizal said that, based on Kabbalah, that there is a connection between Lulav and Sukkah, and he has a Gemara which you remember, Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. We don't paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, but Rabbi Yehuda said on Daf Yud that you can only make the Schach for the Sukkah with Arba Minim. The schach of the sukkah can only be either with a lulav branch, a hadas branch, or an arava branch, or the wood or shavings of an esrog tree, branches of an esrog tree, nothing else. So he sees some type of connection. Recognizing that you're obviously going to take the lulav during davening, that would by definition mean that you took the lulav and esrog before you went to shul, stepped into your sukkah, and were mevarech. Since the Arizal said it, all chassidish rabbeim, that's the way they do it. They tem mekayim the mitzvah arbaminim in the sukkah before they get to davening, and are mekayim the mitzvah there. And the question which many achroinim ask, according to later achroinim, ask on the Arizal is, whatever happened to tadir v'sheino tadir? You're supposed to daven first and be mekayim at mitzvah. And the response that they give, the Sanzer and other chassidish want to defend the practice, is that tadir v'sheino tadir is only when everything is equal. I have no clear preference one above and beyond the other. I don't have any clear preference. I have no other factor by which to guide me which to do first. Then, in the absence of any clinching argument, what do? I say tadir v'sheino tadir tadir kodem. But if there is any convincing argument for the non-tadir, as long as you still have time to do the other tadir, then tadirut plays no role whatsoever. Tadirut plays no role whatsoever. Can anybody quote me a Gemara in Shabbos, Tav Chaf Gimel Amud Beis, to offer support for that? Very famous case. Very famous case. The Gemara has a question as to whether Ner Chanukah or Kiddush, what goes first? I don't have enough money to buy both. Right? So some say, take the money, buy wine for Kiddush. Some say that argument is worthless, because in that case I can only do one. And Tadir V'sheino Tadir is only what? That's one. Second explanation is, no, Ner Chanukah is, even if you could do both, Lu Yitzuya, but Tadir V'sheino Tadir is only when everything is exactly equal. Ner Chanukah is not just any ordinary mitzvah, it's a mitzvah for Sumi Nisa. So since it has that clinching argument, you remember that one? It's a clinching argument, Ner Chanukah is a clinching argument, therefore it overrides everything else. So too, since the consideration is that I want to demonstrate the connection between the lulav and the sukkah, so that tilts the argument in favor of what? In favor of it's 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 in the midst of lulav before you daven, because it overrides, because of whatever this kiyum is, to go ahead and daven, excuse me, to have lulav specifically in the sukkah. Next week we'll continue with the issue of being menachem ovel on yontav. It says, he'olach lenachem esuavelim. It's talking about the first day of sukkahs. Machloikis to Rav Haigon and everybody else.